Alrighty. I want to share a couple of things with you this morning. We're talking about trying to reach people for Jesus, and that is, it's so kind of problematic because we have these preconceptions about what evangelism is and how it works, and we try to knock down some of those presuppositions last time, but those have stayed with us for a long time, and it's hard to kind of break out of some of those ways of thinking. But nevertheless, we need to do it. We're going to talk about the way people outside the church and outside of any church group actually, truly, and honestly think. There's a comprehensive and long-term study by this guy, Tom Rainer, that I talk about in the handout. And what he says in this is that 59% of Americans are not affiliated with any church group at all. Now, that's a national statistic, and it may be higher or lower here. We'd have to pretty much do the same study on a very localized basis to know for sure. But the national average is 59% are not affiliated with any church group of any kind at all. And these people do attend from time to time, and they attend different groups, so they have a wide exposure of religious thinking, and they may share some very deep convictions with some of these groups, but they don't attend one particular group regularly, and they don't affiliate themselves with that group. And we kind of have some stereotypes about people who are like that. But what Rainer has done is actually gone out and interviewed people who were not affiliated with any church group, and then they now are strongly affiliated with a church group. And the reason that that changes the results, and it's been kind of surprising, actually, how the results have changed. One of the reasons that changes the results is because some of the former research by a guy named George Barna and the Gallup organization have both done a lot of religious polling, but they are very indiscriminate. They ask everybody, and consequently, there is a certain percentage of people out there who don't go to any church, are not ever going to go to any church. You could pull a gun on them on Sunday morning and they wouldn't go. There's just no way you're going to get them there. And whatever their responses are completely irrelevant. It doesn't matter what they say about why they don't go or what might bring them in. They're not going to go. It doesn't matter what you do. Well, what Rainer has done is talk to people who were in the category of unaffiliated but now are strongly affiliated, and he asked them, what brought you in? And then from that, he's able to say some things about the kinds of things that are important. So we're going to talk about some of the characteristics that people actually have who will be affiliated with the church. They have not been, but they're open to the idea. He gives us 9 things, and I've added a 10th thing that I just think needs to be said. I think that he assumed this and kind of presupposed this through the study, but the 10th one is mine. The first thing that he says is they are all different kinds of people. And, you know, that is that's pretty obvious and kind of dumb. But when you stop to think about it, most of our evangelistic methods or most of the things that we've tried to reach people are all geared toward one particular type of people. And Rainer has said that he's surveyed a lot of different kinds of evangelistic methods, and they all seem to target white American suburban middle class people. And they can be very effective at reaching that target group. But there are a lot of people who don't fit into that group. And consequently, these evangelistic approaches just kind of leave them cold. They don't really speak to them very much. I want you to go with me to Acts 17. We're going to look at Paul's approach to the Athenians in Acts 17. Just show that whether by inspiration or just by his own incredible wisdom, he was able to see that you need a different approach with different kinds of people. And that's not a bad thing, it's just the way it really is. If you go to Acts chapter 17, we've got Paul in Athens. It says, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace, day by day, with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to dispute with him. Some of them asked, what is this babbler trying to say? Others remarked, he seems to be advocating foreign gods. They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. And they apparently presumed that resurrection was a new god. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus where they said to him, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You're bringing some strange ideas to our ears and we want to know what they mean. All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I see that in every way you're very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Now what you worship is something unknown, I'm going to proclaim to you. And he chases off from there and begins to tell them about Jesus. Well, he uses one approach in the synagogue that's going to rely heavily on the law and the messianic promises that the Jews knew about and the God-fearing Gentiles would also know about because they associated themselves with the Jews. He can use one approach with them. He uses an entirely different approach with the Gentiles who don't know anything about that. So we just need to understand these are different kinds of people. They represent all different ways of thinking. The second thing that Rainer discovered is that people who are not affiliated with the church are completely uninterested in the church name. And what is so surprising about this is there are denominational groups who are banking on, they put all their eggs in this basket of a church name that is not affiliated with a denominational group. So, they have this community church and that community church, and you have things like New Life Church, Covenant Church, something, you know, it's just not affiliated with any kind of religious group, although almost all of them have a strongly Southern Baptist background and a Southern Baptist theology. But they have abandoned this name in an attempt to attract more people. Rainer says it doesn't matter at all. You're just basically wasting your time with that. And one of his stories, one of the things that Rainer said, he was interviewing a guy, and the guy said, I pay no attention to what the sign says out front. He says, I don't pay any attention to store names either. After all, what does Walmart mean? I don't know what Walmart means. It doesn't really mean anything. It's just a name of a location. And so most people who are outside the church, they think nothing about this. It doesn't disturb them at all. A third thing that's kind of surprising is they actually attend churches from time to time. We assume that these people who are not affiliated with the church never go to church services. That's not true. They do go from time to time. They just don't ever go to the same one twice. They keep going on and on. Yes, sir? Okay. Yes. Right. How do you get names for all these different denominational groups? There actually is a little book called Mead's Handbook to Denominations, and it lists all the denominational religious groups in the United States, or purports to. And you're right. 40 years ago, you had 300, 350, 400, some like that, different religious groups. And now it's well over 3,000 in the United States. That was the last number I got. That's probably 15 years out of date. And if you want to go worldwide, you're talking over 10,000 different religious groups. How do they get names for them? Well, in many cases, they're piggybacking denominational names that they have, and other things they're just making up. There was one sign. I don't know if y'all ever saw this. I would come down the turnpike once in a while from Tulsa, or I guess from Joplin to Tulsa, and as you're coming in, there was this big billboard up there. It had the longest church name I've ever seen, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like the Ringing Bell Talking Gospel Church of the Firstborn Foursquare Gospel. You know, it just went on and on and on and on. Tabernacle, and you know, just astonishing. So, I guess that's what you do. You just shuffle the deck, you know, and say, okay, we'll take one of these and one of these and one of these. Yes, sir. You got a church in Tecumseh called the Fresh Bread Church. Are we stale bread? That's interesting. Okay. That's highfalutin name. Yeah. So. Yeah, and Barna had said that is really, really important, and that's the thing that will really attract people, that they're real put off by these denominational labels. And Rainer says, no, they're not. The people you're talking to aren't ever going to a church of any kind. So, you're just wasting your time. Okay. Number four, they can sometimes be reached by direct evangelism. You can just walk up and start talking to them. Different people respond differently. And so some people need this kind of gradual attraction. Some people will respond very quickly. In the very next chapter, in Acts chapter 18, you've got Paul at work in Corinth. And in verse 5, it says, when Silas and Timothy came from Macedonia, Paul devoted himself exclusively to preaching, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. But when the Jews opposed Paul and became abusive, he shook out his clothes in protest and said to them, your blood be on your own heads. I am clear of my responsibility. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles. Then Paul left the synagogue and went next door to the house of Titius Justus, a worshiper of God. Crispus, the synagogue ruler, and his entire household believed in the Lord, and many of the Corinthians who heard him believed and were baptized. So you have some people that believe very quickly, they believe and are baptized. And you have some other people who have heard this, like Crispus, the synagogue ruler. He's heard this for a while as Paul's been talking about this in the synagogue and explaining who Jesus is to them. So some people you can just knock on the door, and they'll come to the door, and you say, I want to tell you about Jesus, and they'll say, I want to know about Jesus. And you can start laying it out for them, and they will obey. Other people need time to think about this and consider this, what I was talking about last time, that most people will not make a snap decision. The people who do obey quickly, as I said last time, either have been thinking about this for a long time and waiting for, you know, some help, guidance to get them into the right understanding about the gospel, or either if they respond rapidly, they may fall away rapidly. If they haven't been thinking about this and working with it for a while, they may fall away just that quickly. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
By the house.
Okay.
They'll always send us a teenager up, and I try to be polite to them because, you know.
Why be impolite? And
yes.
How does that glorify God?
I always think it's interesting the way they'll send a teenager up because it'll kind of, you know, you try, they'll ask a pretty broad question.
Mm-hmm. Evil and cruel, yeah.
But the approach is very interesting.
Okay, now what do you think about that? When you realize that the adults are hanging back there and they've sent a child up to knock on your door, young teenager or a child come knock on your door, what are you thinking?
I think that it's kind of a front they're putting.
Could be manipulative. They're already seeking to manipulate you. Well, you would think that, because you have a broad exposure to church matters generally and training youth and things like that, you know how that's done. I think a lot of people are just going to see that as manipulative. They're not going to like it. And so they've put up a wall already in the minds of the people that they're trying to talk to. I think transparency is really important. I think we need to be as upfront and wide open as possible. Yes, sir. Well, if they're Mormons, that they'll say elder. The JWs, Jehovah's Witnesses, typically don't use that label, I think. But yeah, that's interesting also. So they're coming with an authoritative label on them. I can just see you getting into an argument with him. Having been an elder, you know, that's interesting. How'd you get to be an elder? Tell me about that.
Morning. This is Brian.
No, they're talking about one guy who's running this show. And, that's a misconception that a lot of people have. So they come to me and say, are you the pastor of the Church of Christ out there? And here my option is I can get into a big theological argument with them, or I can say yes. So basically, I try to sidestep it a little bit. Well, I preach there, but, I certainly don't run the show. Ask anybody. Which brings us to number five, while we're talking about preachers. These people who are not affiliated with a church group, they're not really looking for a TV preacher. I mean, they're not looking for that polished, dynamic guy. They're not looking for Joel Osteen. They're not looking for somebody who's really entertaining, which I thought was really good news, because you ain't going to get it. If people are attracted to an entertainment-oriented kind of service, right, they go for the show. They got the big band up there, and they've got the dynamic speakers, and they've got the graphics, and they've got the laser show and all that. If that's what they're looking for, it's going to be real difficult for them to develop a commitment to Christ. Because, are you watching this? A commitment to Christ is about selflessness. It is about giving yourself to Jesus. These people are coming for what they can get. It's all flowing in the wrong direction. Their whole mindset is wrong from the very beginning, and it's going to be impossible for them, virtually impossible, it's going to take a major act of grace in their lives by God, to change them from the kind of people who only bring in, they want, whatever they get, to start thinking about what they give and what they do in their world, So if people are attracted by entertainment, they're not going to develop a commitment to Jesus. Paul said to the Corinthians that, I didn't come to you with eloquence. And what he means by that, I'm sure he was a very effective speaker, but what he means is it wasn't that polished rhetoric that was so indicative of education, training, and people loved to listen to speeches like that. That's not how he came to them. He brought them the gospel and brought them the Holy Spirit. Most people, and Rainer brings this up over and over as they poll these people, what attracted you about the preacher? Well, he's a regular guy. He's just, not some kind of flashy, glitzy character, and he's not living in an ivory tower someplace, doesn't understand what life is about. He's just a regular guy. And that's what people really are looking for. Nobody, I think, expects the local congregational preacher to be one of those goomers off TV with all the special lighting effects and sound effects and all that stuff that goes on. They're not really looking for that. Okay, number six, they can't accept and deal with deep truths. We kind of assume that people don't know the Bible very well, and they don't really have a basis to begin talking and thinking about really deep and powerful life-changing concepts. That's probably not true. They think about these things all the time. Everybody understands, I think, that the war on terror has changed the way we live. Well, what does it mean to live in America now? People are wrestling with all kinds of deep and kind of challenging concepts. It shouldn't surprise us that they can think carefully and powerfully about what it means to live, what the right way to live is, where do you determine your ethics and moral values, how do you pass those moral values on to the next generation, and so on. When Paul is talking to the Gentiles, he's talking to these Athenians in chapter 17, he really touched on some key ideas about... about why certain people live in certain places. This was a hotbed. In verse 24, he said, from one man he made every nation of men that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the times set for them and the exact places where they should live. Now he's saying that's the activity of God. But the philosophers were debating this. That was a hot button topic of the day. Why do the Greeks live in Greece, and why do the Italians live in Italy, and why do the North Africans live in North Africa, and so on? Who decided that they had to stay there, that they're from that area? So he's moving on from there, but then he goes on and talks to them and strikes the very heart of their presuppositions about life, the universe, and everything when he says that Jesus rose from the dead, because they knew for sure that didn't happen. Nobody rises from the dead. And so he's challenged them with a concept that they really are not comfortable with at all. And yet he did wind up with a few converts in Athens. The seventh idea here is that Sunday school is an effective tool in attracting people from outside the church. They're really seeking for relationships, and small groups foster that. You have some people they can get acquainted with and discover they have some shared interests. And there are various congregations that try to generate small groups, and they think that small groups are the one and only answer to this. It's not the one and only answer. It can be an important part of the answer, but there's no one single thing that is going to cure the whole situation and draw everybody to the gospel. It's just not true. Number eight, family and friends are the most important in reaching people. The handout says in March, but really and truly it's Mark. That's kind of the German spelling, right? Mark. My fingers do things automatically sometimes that I have no control over. I don't even know why they do that. Mark 5:19-20, you've got the man who's had the legion of demons cast out of him, and he wants to go with Jesus. Everybody around there is saying, get out of town. We don't want Jesus here anymore. And so the man wants to go with Jesus, and Jesus says, no, you go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you. And the man does, and then later on Jesus is able to talk to a lot of people in that region as a result of this man talking about what Jesus has done. That's a pretty powerful verse when you stop to think about it in any kind of detail. But over and over and over, people recognize that family relationships are among the strongest. One of the things that Rainer pointed out in his first book was that he knew it happened, but he was shocked at the number, the high percentage of people, high percentage of men particularly, who said they became Christians, they became affiliated with a church group because of the influence of their wives. All right? Even in this rather artificially small group here, how many of us came to the Lord because of the influence of our wives? Yeah, see? I mean, it's true. And yet, he says, a lot of congregations don't place any emphasis at all on trying to reach the husbands of the women who are coming to services. Now, how dumb is that? You know, that's one of the most effective means. I mean, this is an important human relationship. And if this is important to her, you would think it would be important to him too. Well, it probably is. He just doesn't realize it yet. So, it's an important way of reaching people. Okay, number nine. Flip the page. We'll look at the back side. People outside any kind of church very often are concerned about other people. We kind of assume that they're not interested in their neighbors, not interested in their children's moral upbringing, and so on. It's not true. They're very concerned about their children, and very often they're concerned about other people. They want to reach out and try to help people who need help. And they recognize that they kind of have some interrelationship with the rest of the world, and they kind of need to be involved with that. So, in Acts chapter 10, you've got Cornelius. Cornelius is a great guy, gives alms to the poor. That's wonderful, isn't it? I mean, he's a guy you want for a neighbor. He's a good citizen, good guy, just in every respect. When Peter comes to him to explain the gospel to him, Cornelius is concerned about everybody. So he's got all of his family and his friends and his servants and everybody else in the household. He's got them all collected together to listen to everything that Peter has to say. Because he's concerned about these people, not just physically, but also spiritually. That's true of a lot of people. A lot of people who are not affiliated with any church group care about their own spiritual lives and other people's spiritual lives too. Now here's the tenth thing that I threw in. And that is not Rainer's observation. So this doesn't really rest on a true statistical survey, but this is my experience. People outside the church are spiritually hungry. They just don't recognize what the problem is. They don't realize that it's a spiritual hunger. You know, when you start on a diet, if you're going to lose some weight, you go to the doctor and you say, okay, what things can I do to peel off some pounds? One of the first things that doctors and nutritionists say is start drinking a lot of water. Start drinking a lot of water. And we kind of assume, oh, well, then my stomach will feel full and then I won't feel hungry and I won't eat as much, right? No, that's not it at all. What's going on is Very often when people are thirsty, they're really looking for water, their body is craving water, the brain misinterprets the signal as hunger. So you go and you get something to eat. Well, you know there's water in food? So your body gets some water, and the craving kind of goes away. Oh, okay, so that was really what I wanted, right? No, you got a whole lot of calories that you didn't really need at all. Your body was after water, but your brain kind of misinterpreted the signal and said, you're hungry. A lot of people are spiritually hungry, but they're misinterpreting all the signs. And so they're doing some things that are really counterproductive to their lives. It's really hurting them. And they don't realize that the hunger is a spiritual hunger. You have this woman at the well. Jesus is talking to this woman at the well. She's thirsty. She's not thirsty for water. She's thirsty for a purpose and meaning in life. She's tried to find it in the right relationships. Do you know how hard that would be in a small town? I mean, just think about having five different husbands in a small town and then wind up living with a guy you're not married to. In a small town, everybody knows your business. She's trying to find some meaning and order and purpose in her life, and she's not finding it anywhere. What's her problem? Her problem is a spiritual problem. She's not in a right relationship with God. Nothing's going to come out right until she's in a right relationship with God. There are a lot of people in our world that are like that. They've got some things wrong in their lives, and they're convinced that, you know, if I could just get this amount of money set aside, then my life would be okay. If I just get the right person in my life, everything would be okay. If I could get this debt cleared off, or get this job, or this educational level, then everything will be okay. They don't realize none of it's going to be okay, because they're not okay. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. It really may be difficult for people to understand that their dissatisfaction, their discontent, and most of their problems in life stem from a spiritual famine. They're hungry. They just don't know what it is that they're hungry for. And we kind of need to help them see that. I think we need to kind of internalize these ideas about who people are who are not affiliated with church groups, because these people are not, typically they are not mean, they're not wicked, they're not cruel, they're not crazy, they're not a bunch of depraved weirdos. Very often they are good people. I mean, we like them. They're good neighbors. They're like Cornelius. They're good neighbors. They're doing a good job, the best job they possibly can do, raising their kids, being productive members of society, and so on. They just have this spiritual hunger because they are absent from a relationship with Christ. And they're not really sure why things become so difficult for them. Everybody else seems to be doing okay. Bit of an illusion there. But for them, there's just a lot of kind of unnecessary pain and sorrow. So these are the people that we're trying to talk to. Let me do something else here. I'm going to pick on Bill McDonald because he's here and he picks on me all the time. So, Bill, let's say that against Edna's better judgment and her wishes, you decide you're going to open a realty office in Seminole. You're going to start selling houses. Okay? Where would you advertise your realty office? Would you, for example, there's a homeowners association newsletter that's published every month. Would you advertise in a homeowners association newsletter? You'd advertise locally.
In the area where I was going to operate.
Okay, you're going to advertise locally. Would you advertise in a circular that was distributed to apartment houses?
Well, a lot of those people want to move from there to a home, so it just might be a good
idea. Aha! We're on to something here. A lot of people living in apartments would like to own their own house, so you go talk to them. You probably wouldn't advertise in a homeowners association newsletter because those people already have a house. So you're going to try to talk to people who don't have a house. Those are the people you're going to try to talk to. Who should we talk to? As we seek to bring people to Christ, should we spend our time talking to people? someone who is a faithful, dedicated member of this church or that church, it's going to be very hard for us to go to them and say, look, you're close. You got a lot of things right, but you're missing this and this and this. They're probably not going to be much interested in hearing from us. But if we can go to people who don't have any religious affiliation at all and talk to them, they may be very interested in hearing what we have to say. So I just think that I think that a firm part of our strategy for reaching out with the gospel needs to be to go to people who don't have any affiliation with any church group at all and talk to them. They may be very willing to hear us. Okay, comments, questions, anything before we quit? You're not going to start a realty office, are you? I mean, you didn't have any designs on that. Okay, because I'm not giving you marketing information here. Yes, sir. He did, didn't he?
I became all things to all men so that by all possible means I might save them.
Some. Yeah.
Some. I do this for the sake of the gospel that I might share its blessings.
Yeah, very true.
I don't think he just had one way.
No. No. We already saw. He could talk in the synagogues to the Jews. He could talk in the marketplace to the Greeks. The one thing he never stopped doing is talking about Jesus. He's just continually talking to people.
He did all things.
Whatever he could.
For what I asked, I think that's what we need to do. Sometimes when we vary from that, sometimes people think a lot on us.
Oh, no. You're talking about ways of taking the message. The message doesn't change. The ways of taking the message does. He did. You know who the most groundbreaking pioneer in evangelism in Churches of Christ was? I kid you not. By a very wide margin. It's not even close. The most groundbreaking pioneer in evangelism in our brotherhood was Jewel Miller. He created those cheesy old film strips. How many of you have seen the Jewel Miller film strips? How many of you have used the Jewel Miller film strips to try to reach somebody with Christ? You know what? They and Tex Stevens did that out of sheer frustration because they couldn't come up with a good method to go out and talk to people about the gospel. The hear, believe, repent, confess, be baptized thing that Walter Scott did in the 1840s didn't work anymore. So they went out and developed this multimedia presentation, film strips. They got a lot of flack about it when they first started bringing that out. There are a lot of people who obeyed the gospel because Jewel Miller and Tex Stevens put together a method that could reach a lot of people. And we look at that now and just yawn. Oh, come on. Way too much information and way too labor-intensive. People aren't going to sit through that. Okay, that's all I got for you this time. We're going to continue on. I've got many, many more things that I want to talk to you about in reaching out and trying to influence people with the gospel. I appreciate your time and I appreciate your thoughts.